Audrey, what is the connection that Horace Pippin has with the Brandywine Valley?
Well, he was born in Westchester, and he left Westchester at the age of 3 with his family. They moved to Goshen, New York, but he returned in 1920 when he married Jenny Ora Featherstone, and they settled in Westchester and stayed there for the rest of his life.
And Pippin's work was actually first championed by N.C. Wyeth, who, of course, has a huge connection to the Brandywine River Museum of Art. Tell us that story.
Well, in 1937, Pippin was represented by 2 paintings in the Chester County Art Association annual exhibition. Christian Brinton was the organizer of the exhibition. He had placed the paintings, apparently, in a position that wasn't real prominent. This is how the story has been told to us. And NC came and he was judging the exhibition. He suggested that they be moved to a more prominent place. The thought is that perhaps Brinton had them less prominently shown because he was the first African-American painter to be shown there, and he was, I guess, worried that there would be negative reaction to it. So anyway, NC gave him an honorable mention, and after that point, his rise was almost meteoric. A year later, he was showing at the Museum of Modern Art, and then he gained the attention of a dealer in Philadelphia, Robert Carlin, who began to represent him. Albert Barnes came to know him, and from then on, he was exhibiting nationally, New York, Chicago, San Francisco.
And for those who aren't aware, Christian Brinton, that you mentioned?
Christian Brinton was an art critic. He was based in Chatsford, and he was also a collector of modern art, a very well-known collection that eventually went to the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
You mentioned one of Pippin's first patrons was Albert Barnes. What did Barnes see in Pippin's work?
What Barnes saw was something that really appealed to him, and that was that Pippin was self-taught, considered a primitive artist. At the time, that was the term used. We don't use that anymore, but basically it meant he was self-taught, that he was an artist who reduced form to its essentials and worked in a more flat style in terms of perspective and composition. Barnes likened that to what he called Negro spirituals. He thought there was an affinity with that and something that he admired both in music and in art. Also, Barnes collected work from Africa, African art, and he saw an affinity with that as well. So he found in Pippin what he called an authentic American artist because he thought he was pure. That was his definition of Pippin, you know, pure innocence, which we look at very differently now. We see Pippin as much more sophisticated than, well, how he was portrayed in his lifetime.
Right. You mentioned we don't use the word primitive anymore. Sometimes it's called folk art, but Pippin himself would not have called himself that. He would have called himself perhaps a realist.
Right. He considered himself to be portraying reality as he saw it, he said, as it really is and as he saw it. He didn't label himself in any way, and he didn't want to be labeled in that way. Basically, the folk art term stuck with him for a couple years, but he was still absorbed into the mainstream of American art and was exhibiting, like, as I said, across the country, still being referred to as a primitive or naive artist. But today he would be considered a narrative painter, or even under the rubric of modernism, because his art has affinities with modern artists in terms of the reduction of form, the flatness, the simplicity, the boldness of color. He fits into that category as well.
In the town of Westchester, as you mentioned, and its surrounding areas appear often in Pippin's work, and harmonizing an oil on canvas from 1944 certainly is one of the more popular images that we associate with Horace Pippin.
Yes, and in it we see 4 singers, 4 young men on a street corner singing a cappella style, and it's very wonderful composition in terms of the organization of the forms and color, but it's also a very kind of tender scene, camaraderie, and you see the men singing together. Below them on the street is what we think a shoeshine kit. So Pippin always added these little details that added to the interest of the painting. But what's really compelling about it is the color, the bright colors of the men's clothing against the back of the fence, which is this wonderful wood grain that Pippin was really drawn to, and he really spent a lot of time on these details.
In the gallery, there are paintings, his war paintings, memories of war. World War I, of course, had a profound effect on him, both as a man and as an artist. He actually said in a letter that he wrote to a friend that the war brought out the art in me.
Yes, and he also said he would never forget suffering and never forget sunset. So he came home with all that in his mind, and he said, I paint from it today. I mentioned earlier that he had created a memoir after returning from the war, and we are lucky enough to have that in the exhibition. We can only show one page at a time, but we do have a video screen showing other pages. It's fascinating reading, and you can find the whole memoir online at the Archives of American Art, but we do have this in the gallery. It gives a really detailed narrative of everyday experience in the war, the really hard part of it, the everyday cold, the chill, the loss of life. And in the paintings that he created related to it, we really get a sense of life in the trenches. There's one in particular that is a combat painting, and that is called The End of the War, Starting Home. And it is one of his earliest paintings. In fact, it may be his earliest painting. He created it for over 3 years, and it really shows not only the process that he was learning, but it also shows the chaos of war. And he creates in the sky fire planes being blown up and falling to the ground. And that illuminates what's happening below. We see the white German soldiers retreating and surrendering to the black soldiers who were seen in the foreground. Now, Pippin was part of this regiment called the 369th Regiment. That was an all-African-American troop. And they went over to France and fought heroically, became known as the Harlem Hellfighters. So you see them in the painting, and there's one figure that is really not very visible, but I think that when people come, they should try to find it. On the right-hand side of the painting, you see a figure laying prone with blood at his neck, and that is representing a dead soldier, something that hadn't been portrayed very often in retelling of World War I. African-American experience is being studied more now than ever before, and in fact, we're going to have a lecture on that very subject in June.
In the exhibition here at the Brandywine River Museum as well. Significant that you have a self-portrait, because there's actually only two known self-portraits of Horace Pippin, and here's one right here.
Yes, unfortunately we were not able to borrow the other one, but we're so pleased to have this one. It's a very intimate portrait of him, very expressive in brushstroke and in the feeling that it conveys, which is of an artist who's very confident, I believe, in himself and really has a belief in his own vision, which is how I've begun to see Pippin throughout this exhibition planning process. He was an artist who, although is considered in the past as isolated and maybe perhaps separated from the art world, he really knew art, and he studied by visiting museums, and also he had visited the Barnes Foundation. So he was not this artist who was so isolated that he wasn't aware of what was happening in the art world. And I think we see that in his work as we look more closely at it. But the self-portrait to me is really one of my favorite parts of the exhibition, because it's so tender and almost intimate portrayal of himself.
There was an exhibit in Pennsylvania in 1994, and the curator, Judith Stein, said he knew he was good.
Yes, she's absolutely right. And what a great exhibition that was. We've sort of built on that foundation for this exhibition. Yes, he knew he was good. In fact, that's where we got the title of the exhibition. He had said to another painter, Edward Loper, another painter, do you know what makes me great, Ed? And it said, no, I'd love to hear it. And Pippin said, I paint things exactly the way they are and the way I see them. So I think that is really telling of him, not only as an artist, but as a man. He saw things the way they were, and he was true to himself in painting them. He said, if an artist knows hard times, he should paint them as well. So I thought that was very telling.
And in the exhibition here of Horace Pippin, a big series that he did called the Holy Mountain Series. Why don't you share with us what this was all about to the artist?
Well, this was a series of four paintings, one of them left unfinished at Pippin's death and found in his studio, that related to the biblical story of Isaiah, and also to Edward Hicks' paintings of the Peaceable Kingdom, which are probably more well-known than Pippin's Holy Mountain series. But Pippin knew of Hicks' series, and the theme, it relates to the idea that the wolf shall be the guest of the lamb. So it's this view of a peaceable world in which beast and people coexist peacefully. It's also a commentary on the state of the world in Pippin's painting, because while we see this unique utopia in the foreground, in the background there's horrific happenings. We see soldiers running through the trees, recalling Pippin's experience probably in World War I, and we see bombs dropping from the sky. It's very subtle. You have to be in front of the painting to really see it, because it's such a contrast with the foreground. We also see on the left the inclusion of a lynching victim hanging from a tree, which he spoke about in one of his letters to his dealer, in which he explained the symbolism of the series. And he said, "To explain it, seeing the world as it is today caused me to paint this picture. If you will notice on the left-hand corner, that you will see the struggle that we went through in 1917 and 1918. And further to the extreme left, you will see what they did and are still doing in the South." So in Pippin's mind, this painting sort of reconciled those two worlds, the world as it is and the world as he hoped it would be. He said that he believed that someday there would be peace in the land.
What do you think Horace Pippin's legacy is?
Well, I think that Pippin was an important artist for a number of reasons. Jacob Lawrence, who was more or less Pippin's contemporary, but painted beyond Pippin, because Pippin died in 1946, saw Pippin as a role model in terms of his subject matter and his persistence at painting and his persistence to keep his own vision. We see scenes of the war. We see scenes of racism. We see social commentary on other issues such as slavery and religion. And I think that all those things are still relevant today and in this world. And for that reason, I think Pippin will resonate with today's audiences.